Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So the internet has been around long enough for us to know that the initial promise that being able to easily connect with far-off people and places would lead to peace and understanding. Families can Skype, but terrorists can post training information. And as we've learned, access to massive amounts of data doesn't necessarily translate into the ability to predict events like the revolutions of the Arab Spring. MIT's Ethan Zuckerman outlines many of the failings of the web in his new book, but he's not throwing in the towel. Instead, he says it's time to take what we've learned and rewire the internet. That's the title of his new book, Rewire: Digital Cosmopolitans in the Age of Connection. And he joins me now. Ethan Zuckerman, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be with you.
And you're right about how the same utopian hopes of universal peace greeted past technology, the telegraph, the airplane, the radio, television even. But you think the web can be different? You want to snatch the term cyber utopian from the jaws of defeat?
Well, your framing, not mine, right? I would probably not choose the term cyber utopian because it's you know, balanced against you at that point. If you're putting the weight of utopia on technology, you're almost always going to get it wrong. But unfortunately, we've hit this point in our debate over technology where either you're a technology enthusiast or a technology skeptic, and neither of those stances is particularly helpful. It's very useful to have critics out there pointing out that people have had very high hopes for technologies. A lot of those hopes have been dashed either by technological shortcoming or by policy shortcoming or by the persistence of humans in having basic traits of human nature. But it seems really helpless to sort of throw up our hands and say, well, that didn't work. Technology didn't do a very good job of connecting us across borders. I guess we can give up on that hope. I'd much rather take a look at what we've done well and poorly in connecting across language and cultures around technologies and figure out if this is an issue that we care about, how we would make things better.
So, for example, you joined us as a weekly guest for a month back in 2009 to talk about the global impact of social media and the website you founded with Rebecca McKinnon, Global Voices Online. That website brings together bloggers from all over the world so people and especially other media people could follow what's happening outside their normal bubbles. But it turned out, you're right, that access wasn't necessarily the problem.
Well, I think that's right. When Rebecca and I started Global Voices now a little bit more than 8 years ago, we theorized that the problem with social media around the world was that most people didn't know that these conversations were taking place. If we simply made those conversations more visible, we would end up having more people using the internet to get a perspective of what's going on in different parts of the world. And for us, the Arab Spring was a very interesting wake-up. We had a pretty unique perspective on the Arab Spring. A number of the people who work for Global Voices were involved in organizing the protests in Tunisia. And in fact, we had the very odd phenomenon of our Tunisian correspondent having to stop reporting because he ended up in prison. And then when he was released, he had to stop reporting because he became the Minister of Youth and Sport. So we were following this, you know, very much from the front lines, but we really couldn't get anyone to pay attention to it. And in fact, even really terrific journalistic institutions like the New York Times largely missed the Tunisia story until the day that Ben Ali fell. And so in many ways, that experience got me writing this book to sort of say, okay, it's clearly not enough just to identify who's out there, what voices are out there. We need to think about these questions of how we discover information. How do we find out what's new and interesting in the world? And what are the limits of those systems that seem to be keeping us paying a lot of attention to local and national information and very little to international information?
And digitally, you write, quote, "The central paradox of this connected age is that while it's easier than ever to share information and perspectives from different parts of the world, we may now often encounter a narrower picture of the world than in less connected days." Is that because of things like the like button on Facebook and that our circle of friends on sites like Facebook tend to be people who are already like us?
So it's really three phenomena at the same time. The first phenomenon, as you identified, is that on social media, we tend to be close to a lot of people who are pretty similar to us in one fashion or another. They're people who we grew up with. They're people who we live near. When you sign on to Facebook, the first thing it does is tries to find your friends going back to elementary school. And many of us lived in communities where we are probably in the majority. There were a lot of people of the same race, ethnicity, religion around us. And so a system like Facebook tends to reinforce this concept from social science called homophily, the idea that birds of a feather tend to flock together. Your Facebook friends, and there are probably some exceptions, tend to have something socioeconomically in common with you and are likely to have access to some of the same chunks of the information universe. So it's great that you can get information from them, but it may not be tremendously diverse information. The other two trends that are going on are, of course, the rise of search, where we get what we want. And it's wonderful that we have powerful search engines that give us what we want, but they're not very good at telling us, here's something you may need to know that you don't know that you want to know. And while all of this goes on, sort of edited, curated media is becoming more domestic by the day. And there's been a dramatic shift in U.S. media and also in U.K. media away from international coverage and towards domestic coverage, which is both cheaper to produce and is also more advertiser-friendly. People seem to spend more time on it. The net result of all three of those trends is that in many ways we may have been getting quite a bit more information from the rest of the world 30 or 40 years ago than we are right now.
Mm. Ethan Zuckerman, my guest on WNYC from MIT, author of Rewire, Digital Cosmopolitans in the Age of Connection. And we asked on our Facebook today if people have any success stories of actually using the web or social media, now that it's been available for a while, to actually connect with people or communities unlike them in a way that they didn't before. And so some of the things coming in, Susie posted, I often check in with the BBC because they cover international news very well, and I like to know what's going on around the world. John posted, I've been following The Patch, that's a local news site, from Seaside Heights, New Jersey, after Sandy. It's been fascinating. So are there also success stories out there that you identify and monitor at MIT?
Oh, I absolutely think so. I'm watching right now the Occupy Gezi protests very closely. And one of the ways that I'm doing it is I know that since I don't speak Turkish and I don't really know how to sort my way through the Turkish media sphere, I'm following a guide. So I'm following my friend Zeynep Tüfeci, who's a Turkish scholar who's based at the University of North Carolina. She's actually gone over to cover the protests. And through her eyes, I'm often able to get a lot of firsthand perspectives. She's what I call in the book a bridge figure. She's connected enough to the U.S., where she lives and works, that she knows what a U.S. user will know and not know about Turkey. So she's able to take those local accounts and give us a lot of context around them. And I think in many cases, when people find that they're getting great information from other parts of the world, bridge figures are often the people who are trying to make that connection in one fashion or another.
Looking at your own site, Global Voices, just today, if people were on it, they could learn that in Brazil there are protests over a bus fare hike that led to hundreds of arrests in Sao Paulo. In Saudi Arabia, small groups of Saudi women held simultaneous sit-ins for freedom across Saudi cities on June 10th, actually, to call for the release of imprisoned relatives. And in Mexico, the rat problem in a Veracruz town has Morris the candidate cat getting a lot of likes in the mayoral race with the slogan, No More Rats. So are there things that you hope will come out of this book to make either individuals or the news media more cosmopolitan or digitally cosmopolitan, to use the title of your book?
Well, I'm trying to reach three audiences. I think it's great if individuals want to take on the task of figuring out how to diversify their media environment, though it's a heavy lift. Taking on that responsibility personally, it's a great thing to do. But in many ways, I really sort of want to go after larger systems that we're embedded in. I think for news media, I think a lot of serious journalists recognize that we're having a harder and harder time covering international news stories, often because of budgetary constraints. But I think professional news organizations could do a better job of curating and working through social media, finding some of these bridge figures who could introduce them to those conversations that are going on. But the audience that I really wanted to reach with this were people who are building the next generation of web tools. We've just gone through a wave of everything social, everything highly personalized, all designed to give you a great deal of information that's very comfortable, that's very unthreatening, that's very low risk. And I'd really like to challenge people who are building these new tools to take seriously this question. Are we getting enough cognitive diversity in the media that we're encountering? This isn't just a political issue. This isn't about political correctness. This is about whether you're getting enough perspectives so that you're thinking at sort of full capacity. And if we're not, can we think about how to build a next generation of tools that help people increase that cognitive diversity by finding unexpected points of views and voices?
First, you have to want to. And I think Dave in Clinton Township wants to make a point about that. Dave, you're on the air. Hi, we've got about 30 seconds for you.
Hi, sure, real quick. Actually, the author basically said exactly what I was going to say, that it's really important. We need to encourage people both on and offline to step out of their cognitive comfort zones and seek out the opinions of people who disagree with them, especially for those of us on the political left. We need to, if we're going to accuse the right of being caught inside their own echo chamber, we can't be hypocrites and then do the exact right. same thing.
So, Dave, I'm going to leave it there, and I get your point. We've got about a minute left, Ethan. How do you bridge that gap? If you have Facebook and you have something that's more random, perhaps, a tool that's going to connect you with people more around the world, how do you get people not to use the one that connects them with their friends and coworkers and, elementary school buddies, as opposed to these tools that you hope will develop?
Well, a couple of things. Just reacting to what Dave said, I think it's important to realize that these filter bubbles that we're encountering are three-dimensional. It's great if we're on the left to be looking for people on the right, but we need to be looking at us, them as well. We need to be looking at questions of who we're reaching out to globally. It's hard to predict how we would build a system that competes head-to-head with Facebook, and that may not be a realistic way to go after this. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people out there who are doing great work as curators. You know, someone like Maria Popova, who started curating a wonderful feed called Brain Pickings. There's a lot of other people who are trying to figure out how to curate around specific topics. I would love to start building some systems that look at what we already do online and then help us find people who are a little bit out of our comfort zone. We're starting to work on a project up here at the Media Lab called The Weekly Different that looks at what you do on Twitter and what you do on Facebook, looks at what links you share, can identify people who are similar to you, but then can also identify people who are a little bit off from you. So maybe we don't match you up, in my case,
and
with,
we're
you know,
out of
conservative
time for today, but we share this interest. Maybe we can even connect on some of this, and good luck developing those tools. I think it's so important. Ethan Zuckerman, author of We Rewire, Digital Cosmopolitans in the Age of Connection.